Welcome to Creating Abundance with Alana Cahoon, sharing inspirational stories from experts around the world. Tap into your inner wisdom at alanacahoon.com. I'm delighted to introduce today's guest, Michelle Shallon, who will be sharing tips on confidence and self-love, has coached and guided thousands from across the globe in personal development, spiritual growth, and inner transformation over the past three decades. Michelle is an international speaker, author, mental fitness coach, breathwork facilitator, and meditation guide. She's your ultimate secret weapon against stressors like anxiety or depression, offering expert strategies for conquering exhaustion through meditation, mindfulness, and breathwork. Michelle is originally from Chicago and has lived in a number of really cool places, including Texas, Florida, Arizona, and Valencia, Spain. She's released her own book, Mindful Metamorphosis, A Compassionate Guide to Inner Transformation. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you here. So where are you today?
Thank you so much. I am in Chicago. I'm at an Airbnb in Chicago on my US book tour. My Audible version just came out in May with my narration in English. And my Spanish isn't good enough to do the Audible. And I'll be soon going to Asheville the 15th, Asheville, North Carolina.
How exciting. Welcome back. Thanks. Where do you live? Where's your permanent residence these days?
Right now I live in Austin.
Okay.
Yeah, I live in Austin, Texas. I love Chicago. It's a great town. I am a Midwestern girl through and through for sure. And when I connect with other people from the Midwest, we have kind of this little bond, you know, Northerners in general, but Midwest for sure. But I just couldn't handle the hibernation for 6 months with the winter, you know. So in 1999, we went to Texas. And I've also lived in Key West, Phoenix, Arizona, and as you said, in Valencia, Spain for 3.5 years. I was actually there more recently from 2017 to 2021. And I was over there during the COVID. And it was very, very strict. Yeah. And that experience, actually, the book, the idea of my book, Mindful Metamorphosis, came out of that.
Oh, isn't that beautiful?
Yeah. Even though I'd wanted to write a book for years, and, you know, like a lot of people, you know, it's hard to, you know, you wrote a book, you know, it's hard to stick with it and get that thing done. It's a big project. And, this was the one I did.
I love it. Well, actually, my book was spawned through the pandemic. It was like I had started all these books. I think I had started 7. I'm like, well, better get them out.
Now's the time.
Right. Yeah, now's the time. So tell us the name of your book.
Mindful Metamorphosis, A Compassionate Guide to Inner Transformation.
Beautiful. So, just share, I don't know, you know, since you're on your book tour, tell us a little bit more of what this inner transformation is and how you use and apply mindfulness in it.
Well, my journey started, I mean, I was very involved in 12-step communities for 26 years. Okay. Very involved. Ended up, the one that really was my thing was Workaholics Anonymous. And a lot of people laugh because they don't know it exists, but it started in the 80s. And I was on the board and I was the outreach coordinator.
Wait, can I just say how funny that is?
I know. Everybody laughs.
I'm so sorry, but
here everybody laughs. It's comical, so, right?
And you're already working. You're already like, no, I'm going to run this
place. I was recruited by this
guy.
That, you know?
And I'm going to run that.
I was recruited by one of the president of the board. And so it actually was it brought me to Europe for the first time. Because there was a group over there in Freiburg, Germany, that was doing the same thing. They were, you know, around workaholism and working 12 steps, but they didn't want to merge with us. But they were translating our literature. So I actually went over there for the very first time to Germany in Europe. That was my first experience like 12 years ago. And I absolutely loved it. And so, you know, I looked for reasons, ways to get back. So I did a lot of help with, you know, trauma, addiction, helping people, hundreds of women. I was very, very involved. It was the foundation of my marriage. I'm not married anymore, but my kids grew up in that community and everything. A lot of experience and studied psychology and sociology all my life. But it wasn't until, and I grew a lot. But it wasn't until I started meditating that I really grew. I think that that's, I don't think it's real possible to get really in heal inward, to heal from trauma and grow spiritually and get more conscious without going inward. And that's certainly what happened to me. And I ended up having a back surgery because of the way I lived, because I was a workaholic and I was just go, go, go. And I ate really good. I was exercise queen and all that, but I did not have balance. And, you know, finally the universe was like, I'm going to make you slow down. And I ended up having back surgery in 2014. And it was the first time in my life that I had to be still. And I didn't really question, I just wasn't conscious enough to question why I created a life where I was constantly moving and I didn't stay still. So I'm uncomfortable staying still because of what was inside me, which I think a lot of people experience, but they don't really understand it. You have a lot of people say, I just like to be busy, because they're uncomfortable with being still, you know what I mean? And being more silent because of everything that's inside of us that, you know, our culture encourages us to push down, right? And so that's when I really started, just a lot of suppressed emotions started coming up from a whole lifetime and a marriage to a man who was absolutely wonderful, lovely man. He's a great, great friend in a lot of ways, but he was just did not want to grow and did not want to change. And he was too afraid. And that was not sustainable, you know, after quite a while. But we were married for 27 years. We didn't get divorced until 30. And but it wasn't healthy for me or either of us at the end. And so, you know, I branched out. And when we separated, that's when I went to Spain after visiting several over the years, several times. Yeah, visiting. So I went to Spain improve my Spanish. That was my conscious, you know, goal. Okay. But the universe had another thing in plan for me. And I did, you know, I was getting the meditation, mindfulness, yoga, and everything, you know, and then I went to Spain. And I had a lot of experiences. I checked in. I found Joe Dispenza for the first time. I don't know if you're familiar with him. I went to his conference. I read his books. I studied under him and everything. I went to his conference in Italy. And that really was a really great shot in the arm for my meditation practice and learning a lot more. And I studied under a lot more people as well. And I realized I was very naive when I went over to, I was a very naive American going abroad. And I knew it was going to be hard, but I had no idea how difficult it was going to be for me. Not only just with my emotional state. I mean, I was coming out of a very 27-year-old marriage and hoping it would work. So we weren't like cut off yet, totally. And I went to Spain not knowing anybody. And I had a beginner level of Spanish. Okay, so I didn't know anybody. I couldn't understand a lot. I couldn't express myself. I talk about this part in my book. And then I attracted a man who was very emotionally unavailable, like my father, because I still hadn't healed from that wound. And so I had this whole experience around that. And I didn't really realize, I had inklings, but I didn't really realize until I came home and watched and studied, you know, it had more healing, big healing. I watched, I got into Gabor Mate's work. Do you know who he is?
Little bit.
He's amazing. I highly recommend you'd love it. Anybody, he's super compassionate and brilliant. And I watched his documentary, A Wisdom of Trauma, and it really hit me. And after three weeks, I weeped about my childhood, nothing new. And I was learning that you just have deeper waves of healing sometimes about the same thing. It just needs to come out. And I, you know, I had more healing, more plant medicine experiences, which is big, big part of my healing experiences.
Plant medicine.
And so I realized that I relived my childhood trauma out in Spain.
Oh,
so that
my
was
goodness.
The yeah, that was the okay. Universe's idea. No, we're gonna okay. While you're over here, we're gonna have you face the biggest fear in your life was to be alone. That's why I stayed in the marriage as long as I did, and relive this whole thing with your dad. You know, to stop that pattern, to continue to try to find a man to validate me. and make me worthwhile, because I didn't have that depth of self-love yet. And after doing that for a little while, and he wasn't the only man I was with, I went into this promiscuous teenager thing all over again, just like I was a kid. Like I was reliving my childhood. It was incredible. And because I just, you know, wanted validation and wanted someone to give me attention and someone to love me, you know, it was the same. And I was, you know, I had some good experiences, but a lot of it was pretty shallow, and, you know, and I was not happy. And then I knew intuitively, I'd already been meditating and mindful. I was like, all right, you need to cultivate self-love big time, because this is not working. You need to be with women more. And that's really when I like made the conscious decision to increase my tribe of women, of more conscious women that were into what I was into, and stop looking for validation with men and really go inward and really heal deeply. And that's what took place. It's still taking place, of course, but that's what took place in a very big way. And during the quarantine, I met a lot of friends. I had wonderful experiences, even though it was a very difficult.
So while you were in Spain, the pandemic hit.
After I was there for 2 years, I was there for 2 years.
Okay.
And then the pandemic hit. Right. I was en route to extend my second visa. And and once I was there for 5 years, then I could work legally. Because at the time I was working under the table doing teaching English. Okay. Because I couldn't work legally. I had a non-lucrative visa. It was just impossible to get a work visa.
Mm-hmm.
And so the pandemic hit. It went from this really big celebratory vibe, because they were getting ready for their annual event, real big event called FIES. And then Italy canceled their big event for the first time in 40 years. And then we were all like, what's going to happen? And then boom. So it went from this beautiful, fun, get ready, to boom, like fear, mm-hmm. depression, this big cloak, you know, and it was mm-hmm. very, very severe restrictions. And you can't even comprehend, unless you paid attention to what was going on over there. You know, Americans can't comprehend how strict it was. I lived in a studio apartment with no balcony and no yard. And all I was allowed to do is go to the grocery store a block and a half away and come back for 7 weeks.
Mm.
And I luckily had big, big shutter windows, giant shutter windows that I could open up. Thank goodness, that really saved me. So basically what I did, besides just talking to my students on Zoom and Skype, I said, okay, I'm going to use this time to really hunker down and put myself in a bubble, just to put myself in a bubble. And I'm not going to watch any, I was already getting away from watching movies and series and stuff, because I was learning more about what you put in your mind and how it affects your life. Okay. And how it affects your thinking. So I started getting very, very intentional and moving away from all of that pop culture. I mean, I used to be all about it. Okay.
Sure.
And my daughter was like, why? I can't talk to you about hardly any movies or series anymore. You're not watching anything. I'm like, no, I'm not. I just got in the very intentional, but I don't want to put anything violent or disturbing in my mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I'm
I just don't.
You. I get it.
I mean, I do like to be informed, newsworthy, which, you know, that's kind of hard, right? Because there's a lot of negativity, but I'm very careful with how much I do that and when I do it and all that. So, but as far as, you know, a lot of the movies and series, I've just like, no. So all I did was watch an occasional documentary, and everything else was all inspirational, motivational, educational around this, you know, neuroplasticity and the science and how to reprogram your subconscious beliefs and affirmations. And luckily, I don't believe in coincidences. I had procured some chocolate bars from a man in Netherlands that had psilocybin in them. And I had already experienced where I and was gaining a lot of knowledge where I could be working on something. Like, for example, when I said I was going to start really working on cultivating self-love through guided meditations and mm-hmm. breath work and stuff like that, I had an experience. This was before the quarantine. I had an experience with a group with a psilocybin journey. And I cried for an hour and a half about how much I loved myself. It was incredible. My whole pillow was soaking wet, because I was just crying, laying down, crying. And I was so, it was like, I swear, an hour and a half. It was incredible. But that illustrated to me, that showed me that this amplifies what I'm working on. So if I work on forgiveness, self-love, whatever, gratitude, and then I have a journey like that, it amplifies it. So what happened to me during the quarantine, I was like, oh, I got these chocolates. Great. So each Saturday, I would have a journey. And I was reading the book, How to Change Your Mind, by Michael Pollan, who on there's a series on Netflix of the same title, highly recommend it. And he had mentioned maybe listening to classical music during the experience. And if you've ever, anybody's ever had the experience, what you, the set and the setting is everything. What you pull in to the setting will change your experience.
Okay, so I just want to interrupt you so that the audience is following you, because we're talking about a lot, which is really beautiful. But we're talking about your book, and a lot of this is in your book. And so your journey is that you were married for almost 30 years, and at the tail end of it, you moved to Spain, and your adolescence came back to life, and you had fun, you taught English, and then you started getting into meditation. And I'm not sure if that was inspired by the pandemic and the quarantine.
The meditation I started getting into in 2014, and I didn't Spain 2017. What inspired me getting from my back surgery? That's what inspired me initially to get into meditation.
So you had back surgery while you were still in the States. That inspired your meditation practice. And then you moved to Europe to learn Spanish, teach English, and ended up getting caught in this pandemic. And so, and then if you could just clarify, you started experimenting with plant-based drugs. Is that it? And so when you say every Saturday went on a journey, you were taking what is it called?
Psilocybin mushrooms.
Mushrooms. Okay. And did you have anyone there to support you, or you did this by yourself?
I did this by myself, which I don't recommend.
Okay. Yeah. Cause I don't do it. I have a natural, easy way to transcend, probably because I've been meditating since I was 16. So it's pretty easy. I focus on grounding myself more. That I've never been drawn to the aphrodisiacs or the any kind of stimulants or, you know, assistance like that. But I have talked to others who have. I know shamans who actually lead these. And I've read that it's always in your best interest to have someone, spiritual guide there, because you can, like you're saying, you can unveil these wounds that can be extraordinarily painful. So everyone who's listening, if you go forward with this,
you should always
please
get somebody
talk to someone who actually administers it and guides it, and there's lots
and
of things.
educates you prepares you, and gives you a very safe container, and helps you with integration. Very important. A lot of people may provide this service, but then they kind of miss the integration part, which is hugely important, because sometimes you know, a week or two or several weeks later, whatever, you know, you go, oh wow, you know, you're going to get more insights and stuff like that. So yes, no, I don't recommend other people, but because of my background, I did a lot of research, I understand trauma psychology, you know, I just, because of my background and my meditation practice,
and
was
you were
really
stuck
strong
in Spain by yourself in an apartment.
I didn't have anybody I could, hey, you know. And my meditation practice really, so I tell people, if you have a minute, it's really good to have a meditation practice before you do this kind of experience, and understand that when you're in this kind of experience, if something comes to you that's upsetting or scary, your meditation will.
Your timeout, you somehow pressed the
mute
button.
Sorry.
So we missed that.
So my meditation would kick in right away. If I got something like, ooh, something in my mind that scared me, I immediately, my mind would go, it's okay, Michelle, this is just your mind. It's all right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I know that was my meditation practice to help me do that, because I have more control over my mind. You know what I mean? And also the important thing, just like if you were going to do breath work or, you know, meditation, guided meditation, which things can come up, you know, for healing, is not to resist it. Same thing with life, right? The more you resist, you know, your emotion, your difficult emotions or anxiety, instead of just like embracing them and going, okay, what's going on? Let them be, instead of trying to push through them and push them down, the more you're going to suffer, right? I mean, a really great quote from Thich Nhat Hanh, the Buddhist Vietnamese monk, was, when you learn to suffer better, you'll suffer much less. Yeah, I love
when
that
you
quote.
Learn to suffer better,
yes,
you will suffer
you
much
suffer
less.
Much less. I
Yeah,
love that
because
quote
life
so
is
much.
suffering.
That's right.
There's no way around it. It's about gaining these tools to manage suffering.
Exactly.
And as
So
soon as you recognize that, you know, that
exactly.
If you just keep shoving them down, as you're saying, or take a pill to you know, numb yourself, they're not going to go away.
No,
And
it's
so,
going to get worse, and then you're going to have all the effects of what's going to happen to your brain by taking these pills for years. Okay,
yeah,
that's a whole other story. So I mean, we have this, like, you know, Cinderella version of a life that everything should be fair and happy, and we should never have, you know, difficult feelings. I don't say bad or negative feelings, because it's part of who you are. And if you label part of who you are negative and bad, it's really hard to have total unconditional love for yourself. So they're challenging feelings. And we have this idea of, like, oh, we shouldn't feel this way or whatever. So we have this experience, we're human, we're having some emotional suffering. And then we have a little voice that says, you're suffering and you shouldn't be suffering. So now we've just exasperated the suffering.
Absolutely.
You know,
Yeah.
we do the
Yeah.
same thing with anxiety. We do the same thing with depression. We do the same thing with being tired, even.
Mm-hmm.
I'm tired. Why am I tired? I don't want to be tired. Let's just drink some stimulant, you know? You know? So we make it worse. Yeah. And I love that quote so much. I almost titled my book, Suffer Better, Suffer Less. And I thought it was great. It's super catchy, you know? And you
no one will
understand.
buy it.
Exactly. The editor was like, I really don't think it's a good idea to have the word suffer on the front of your book.
Right,
It's not.
right.
So I said, all right.
Yeah, we want the results. We want to feel good, and that's okay. Yeah, so that was your journey.
Let me tell you real quick why I brought this up. So yes, so my first experience was visiting my ex-husband in Indonesia with drinking a mushroom juice drink. And I was like, for 6 hours, I was totally present. Everything was interesting. I had no interest at all in touching my phone. And I felt like a child, like everything was super interesting. I was totally present. And that's what was like, wow, I want to learn more about this. And then I got into learning how you can heal and get into the subconscious and all that kind of stuff. Okay.
Yeah.
And when I was reading this book and he had the suggestion of the classical music, I said, okay, I'll do that. And I put it on, and totally unexpected, I heard the Nutcracker Ballet. And this was a huge bond for my mother and I, huge. And my mother and I had a very volatile relationship, and she had been dead for 30 years. Okay. And I heard the Nutcracker Ballet, and I had a lot of, you know, forgiveness issues, and I was working on them. And I told you, kind of like, it fast forwards, it catapults like the healing. I've been working on the forgiveness around her and I. And then all of a sudden, I had a presence with a spirit for the first time in my life. And I couldn't see her, I couldn't hear her, but her presence was absolutely undeniable, which is not an unusual experience with people that have these kind of journeys. Okay, this is not unusual. And I was like, oh my God, you're here, you know? And it was this beautiful, beautiful, you know, transformative healing experience. After this experience, I never had any bad, you know, thoughts about her at all. They're all like loving, loving, loving. It was absolutely beautiful. And during this experience, she told me to write this book. She was like, you're changing so much. You're learning so much. You're getting a huge shift. You need to write this. You need to write a book to tell people. So that's what really fueled, you know, that really helped fuel my desire when it was hard to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
great.
Ever since then, I have contact with her now. I'm closer to her now than when she was alive.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Wonderful.
Yeah.
So share with us then, how has self-love impacted your journey?
Oh, everything has changed everything. The more I read something that I really loved. It said healing is not becoming the best version of yourself. Healing is accepting all versions of yourself. And I think that's really essential to get really deep self-love, and to, you know, like I said, not call your difficult, you know, challenging emotions or things about you that you don't totally like, that maybe you have a little shame or guilt around, you don't like to tell people, to accept all of that. You know, you're a human being. Everybody's got all kinds of different, you know, things about them, you know, and really go deep into that on a regular basis with, you know, meditation and breath work. And sometimes, you know, some of my journeys, and just pay attention to the progress, how I'm treating myself, how I'm talking, that how your words are everything, how you talk to yourself, how you label yourself, how you talk your interior talk and out loud. I started really, you know, having the training of meditation, you know, help the mindfulness practice because they work in tandem, you know, and all of a sudden I'm noticing like what I'm saying more often. And I don't want to say that, you know, the stuff that's in the background that you're unaware. And then all of a sudden when you start doing all these practices, it starts coming more forward and you're like, wow, I'm more negative than I thought I was, you know, and I did, you know, I started really focusing on changing all that. Using affirmations has been huge for reprogramming my brain. Your yeah. subconscious is literal like a child and it believes everything you tell it. Mm-hmm. And repetition is how it learns. So I had all these different practices to help basically change the way I looked at myself. And as a result, I have a lot of compassion and love for myself. I treat myself in a much better manner. I give myself rest more often. I can go off on, you know, I start getting, you know, into something. I have to remind Michelle, slow down. You don't, let's take a break. When's the last time you took a break today? Let's do that, you know. But before I just boom, 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 boom. I was going all the time. And so, you know, just more compassion and love for myself, talking to me when I do something to myself, like simple as silently kind of pushing myself forward, doing work, let's say, mm-hmm. you know, like silent, not even, I don't talk badly to myself, just like silent pushing myself, you know, and a little too much and not enough balance. I will apologize to myself. I got in the mm-hmm. habit of saying, I'm sorry, sweetie. I don't want to treat you that way. You need to rest. You need to do blah, 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 blah. You need balance, mm-hmm. you know? And so I'll correct myself and I'll say it out loud. If there's any words that I think or come out of my mouth that are not conducive to self-love, I will immediately correct it out loud. Mm-hmm. And then also having the self-love and compassion for myself has, you know, brought and been able to forgive. Another big deal is forgiving yourself, you know, mm-hmm. specifically going very inward and forgiving yourself for whatever you didn't do or did do or on that. And my big thing around that was around how my habit, my being busy all the time and the feeling of anxiety that I had, which 10 years we didn't even talk about in the mainstream, affected my children. Okay. So I had guilt and, you know, around that a lot. And I had to really forgive myself in a very deep way for that. And that was the biggest thing. I didn't know any better. I mean, I remember I saw a video one time of Eckhart Tolle, who's also been a huge, you know, influencer in my life. A woman asked him in a group setting, you know, how do you forgive yourself for not being a more conscious parent? And he said, there's no forgiveness necessary. You wouldn't have known how to do it. You know, this is conscious parenting is really more recent in the modern Western world. You know, he said, you didn't know any better. You did the best you could kind of thing. And I was, and that helped me, you know, but doing that also self-forgiveness, I believe is a huge part of self-love, of course. And then that also, you know, helps in my life where I can forgive other people. Yeah. I'll get into the, oh, I'm mad and hold on to a resentment for a little bit. I'm like, I don't want this anymore. I don't want this toxic energy. You know, that person, you know, was not conscious enough. They didn't even know what they were saying or doing, or who knows what they got going on in their life. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
And
so what I'm hearing is that self-acceptance and forgiveness, you know, just as we want to accept and forgive others, we so need to bring that to ourselves. So I want to thank you very much. In our last minute, just share how people can reach you. Where can they find your book and where can they find more information about you and your offerings?
Okay, thanks. The book is available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and it's in English and Spanish, ebook and paperback. It's also available hard copy English and then Audible in English. Okay. And I have a Facebook group called Mindful Metamorphosis that I share a lot of great information to help people. And not only from me, but experts that I have studied under and that I like a lot, neuroscience, doctors, therapists, whatever. I'll share their videos that are really helpful about different subject matters that people are interested in. And I also have my own YouTube channel too, where I share a lot of different short videos to help people with stress and anxiety and, you know, just bringing to them a lot of holistic practices that can really help them.
That's fantastic. So this is Michelle Schallin, MichelleSchallin. And we'll have links to her, all of her sites on the show notes. So it's been a joy and a delight to have you here.
Thank you very much for having me.
We look forward to following you. And to all of the listeners, thank you for being here. Thank you for being in the audience. And receive all the wisdom that you're learning. If something struck a chord, take that with you. Think about what that was. And do some self-reflection, positive affirmations, self-love, self-forgiveness.
Yes.
So my name is Alana, and this is Creating Abundance for Radiant Health, Wealth, and Happiness. Until the next time, namaste.
Namaste.
Thank you for listening to Creating Abundance. Be sure to like and subscribe. Stay tuned for the next podcast and get your free ebook at alanacahoon.com/ebook.